Since recording the last podcast on social distancing a short time ago, there have been a number of changes, including full closures of school systems and public spaces. With these uncertain times, it is abundantly clear that there is an increased need for focusing on mental health in the era of COVID-19. This podcast will focus on these issues. I would like to welcome Cynthia Handrup, the president of the Global Alliance, a faculty member at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and she holds her own private psychotherapy practice group. Cynthia, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning in these troubling times.
Could you please start by telling us what are some of the evolving mental health related issues to the pandemic?
So a couple of things that I've seen in my practice, and just to give you some information, I am a full-time professor, but I do have a private practice where I see patients once a week in a group psychiatric office. And just this change from 1 week ago to today, because I see patients on Tuesday, has been drastic. The level of anxiety that's been exhibited by people who not only have existing generalized anxiety disorder or panic disorder, but people who it's just sort of cropped up over the in the last week. Certainly, one of the things we're doing here in the office is that we are continuing to see people within a private office. So the building is still open. We see people by maintaining a distance and certainly taking all the necessary requirements for wiping down surfaces and disinfecting. However, we do offer outpatient phone sessions. The only issue is that there are some patients who, since this is also a psychiatric medication evaluation practice, so that we do have patients who need to come in for either injectable medication or people who are getting medication from us that are being given to us through insurance companies, and we need to make sure that everybody has got an ample supply of medication. So people I've been seeing today who are on medication, I've been making sure that their prescriptions have been filled for a 90-day supply, and that we have supplied them if they've been getting medication from our office.
So anxiety, stress, have there been any other main mental health issues that have been on the rise in the last week in your practice?
So I have not, you know, it's interesting that you would ask that, because we have not seen as much. It's been predominantly anxiety. We haven't seen that much depression. I did see someone who was particularly angry, and so that can be that can be something that's coming from his depression. But generally, it's this overwhelming anxiety. The fear that the first person I saw today is someone who worked in the restaurant. A very upscale restaurant in Chicago, and the restaurant closed. So he's laid off. On the other hand, the person was very grateful that the restaurant chose to close rather than remain open for deliveries and pickups, because by the restaurant closing its business, then people are able to apply for unemployment benefits, which is something, you know, that is a real concern for people with the financial loss of this. The people who are self-employed, you know, it's an issue because they're worried that they aren't going to be able to go out and get the kinds of jobs if they were doing any kind of freelance work where they were going out and, let's say, doing video work or filming things, delivering a service to other people. You know, I just spoke with someone who has just been hired on at a gym as a personal trainer, who was now called and said the gym's closing, so you don't have your job anymore. The other real striking level of anxiety I've seen in people has been over the issue of having an older parent or loved one in a nursing home or retirement community that has restricted visiting hours, or that people are restricted access. And so I've actually seen this notion of, and people expressing their concern about, am I ever going to see my parent alive again? This is particularly true for older people who may not be ambulatory, so they can't go near the window and even wave out the window to their family. For instance, my mother is in a retirement community, but I'm able to go and pick her up and we can go for a walk around the grounds, or I can take her for a ride in my car. Can't go to any restaurants or shopping, but we're able to at least spend some time together. But people who have family members who are not ambulatory, who are have dementia, Alzheimer's, and may be cognitively impaired to the point that they aren't even able to use social media to, have the staff hook up a video conferencing. They have a real concern and a real fear about that. And I've spoke to several people who are very tearful about the fact they may never see their older, my mother might die in the nursing home and I'll never see her again. So those are some of the things that really seem to be on people's minds.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing some of the individual and family level challenges that you've been aiding to with your clients in your practice. What are important messages that you can share with our listeners for those that are not able to see a clinician themselves?
Sure. I do want to reiterate, though, that that most clinicians I know, therapists and providers of psychiatric services being medication or even hospitalization, even though they may not be seeing people in their offices, almost everyone is providing some sort of support via phone sessions. So if you do have contact with somebody or had contact with somebody and feel you need to reconnect, this is a time that you could do it. And I think we've also been talking about the fact that insurance companies, if you were using insurance to pay for those sessions, have been waiving the telehealth restriction. And so most, if you're using insurance, that most of the individuals, the providers, will be able to bill through insurance for those sessions. I think things like really the concerns about isolation and what people do when they are in isolation or even this social distancing. If we follow the recent guidelines of limiting the number of people you're with to 10 or 25 or whatever it is in your locale, that really puts a strain on people's socializing abilities. And we know that's really important for people. So there are like many ways to continue. And I think, the idea of maintaining social communication during social isolation or social distancing is really important. So that you may not be able to get together with the friends with your book group that meets once a month, but maybe you can do your book group via Zoom or via Skype and still meet with people that way. This idea, I think the more immediate and more intimate communication can be, the better. So rather than texting your friends to pick up the phone and call them, is hearing a voice is a lot more reassuring than just a text message. If you're able to use social, meet even further in terms of connecting via Zoom or Skype, it's reassuring to see a face and actually carry on a conversation with someone. So I think those sorts of ways of communicating help, I think, alleviate some of that feeling of social isolation. The longer that goes on, I think the more difficult it's going to be for people to sort of maintain that, but it's really important. Important to facilitate communication with loved ones. So even if you're limiting social groups to 10 people, it's probably still important to get together with your immediate family, maybe to have them over for dinner or to get together just in terms of meeting up. And certainly people can still go outside, take walks. You can take a walk with a friend. That sort of thing is certainly what I think people need to do to reduce boredom when they are isolated. And it's certainly with exercise, since most gyms are closing. There's lots of stuff available online. There are like complete yoga sessions available online for people to do, and all other sorts of exercise, which is really important.
Yeah, thank you. You've mentioned quite a lot of ways and strategies for social inclusion, even in light of social distancing. So that's excellent suggestions for people to share with friends and family, and also for for them to do themselves. I'm curious, in your experience, have there been any similar situations in the past that we can maybe take some positive lessons learned to apply to this time?
Yeah, I think sort of the most immediate thing, I mean, that comes to mind, I know we all look at past flu epidemics on, you know, the flu of 1918, so to speak, but, you know, those were really different times, and we didn't have some of the means we have now in terms of communication and also treatments. But I've often been thinking about the aftermath of 9/11 during all of this. And I think, and I was also seeing patients in my practice during that time. And there was anxiety and fear about would this happen again, but there was a much, much more depression about losses that people had experienced, you know, the crisis, the buildings fell, and it was a horrible thing that happened, and people were dealing with all of their anger about that, and again, dealing with losses. I think this is different in the sense that it's this ongoing fear, and I know we have a term that we call free-floating anxiety, which is really sort of how I see this, that people, they're not sure what to be anxious about next here, and so that's why I think we see people panic buying toilet paper. Things that they think that gives them a sense of an anxiety relief for a moment of time when they stock up on toilet paper. But this anxiety, and certainly listening to the news, and every day it's like a different level of isolation that they're requiring cities and states to go on. So I think it's this unfolding anxiety that I've really not seen as much. I think, like I said, I compared to 9/11, but 9/11 to me seemed that the event occurred, and then we dealt with the aftermath. But it seems like we're dealing with new anxiety every day with this crisis.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I mean, I think that one thing that is important to also make sure our listeners and their networks all understand is that we are all in this together.
Yes.
Different states and different countries might be approaching things slightly differently, but globally we're working together in this pandemic, and that all these different levels of feelings and emotions and uncertainty are shared the world over. So I think that there is some form of normalcy in these feelings. So for the last question, I want to ask, in understanding this uncertainty at this time, and that it is scary for many people, can you share any thoughts that you have on tangible actions that we can each take for ourselves and for those around us in terms of how we can help each other?
Yeah, well, I think what I would like to end with is actually to quote Dr. Alan Francis, a psychiatrist who is very active on Twitter. And this morning or late last night, I read an interesting tweet of his, which was sort of what might be some positive effects of this isolation or quarantine. And he had 8 different points, but I thought they were really good. So I'm going to repeat them for you. So the first was that it allows us, so isolation or quarantine allows us to discover all the things we don't need to be happy. It allows us to get closer to those we love via social networks and via telephone calls and making phone calls to people. I've like people that I haven't talked to in a long time, I noticed the last couple of days, have been calling and from, you know, like, how are you doing? Are you guys okay? Getting back in touch with yourself, reading books, watching television and Netflix series or a streaming series you wanted to see and never had time. Listening to music, to sort of get back into listening to music, to exercise, even whether it be at home or outside, and to catch up on politics, those of us who haven't been. And again, what you said, Gita, which is the feeling that we're all in this together.
Well, that was excellent, an excellent way to end this podcast. And Cynthia, thank you so much. We appreciate your time and your service.
Thank you.
And all the other people out there that are working hard to help their clients. Thank you.
Thank you.